Quinnell, Reel 7.
You mentioned dugouts as well.
Yes.
What were they like in construction, well, the first ones you saw?
The dugouts that we had, that we first saw, it wasn't until the Battle of Loos, when we captured the German lines, that we knew what real dugouts were. The dugouts we had that in spring of 1915 were simply holes in the side of the trench, about 3 feet in height from the floor and about 3 or 4 feet in depth. And they were very primitive affairs. But when we'd captured the German lines at Loos, we came across dugouts that were 30 feet deep, and you could shell them till the cows came home and they would laugh at it.
Mm. One other question about the trenches and the impression they first made on you. Apart from the fact that the trenches in France looked more lived in than the ones you had got used to during training at home, was there anything else that struck you as being rather different in character about the physical characteristics of the actual trenches in the Western Front as compared with those that you had worked in as a training exercise back in England?
Yeah. These trenches in France, in addition to fire step, you would, one of the things that you would find in every bay was a miniature fireplace. Carved out the, always on the reverse side, on the parados side of the trench, with a little fireplace where you used to have a brew up. That was one of the things which we never did in England. Then there were the latrines were also always on the back side of the trench, reverse side of the trench, a little short trench of about 5-6 yards. And then a square place about 6 foot square. And that was the latrine.
It was just an open pit, was it?
Open pit, yeah.
Were there any structures for you to sit on?
Just one piece of wood across the for the seat. Just one, generally a branch of a tree.
Good. Now, you went into the front line trenches at Hoop Lines.
Yes.
In the spring of 1915.
Yes.
Could you start off by telling me what were the actual procedures that you would go through before actually going into the front line? Was there a routine?
Yes. The first thing you did when you knew you were going into the line was to go around to the cook carts and get a bundle of firewood. Now, a piece of old boxwood, see, the rations used to come up in, like, bully beef, for instance, would come up in wooden cases. And that wood was very, very precious to us. You would go and get two pieces of wood, we'll say about 18 inches long and about 6 inches wide, and that would be enough for the whole time you were in the trenches. Because when you used your, when you had a brew up, you used little tiny slivers of wood, because you must not make smoke. If you made smoke in the front line, over would come a shell or a grenade or a trench mortar. So when you had spare time, you simply carved up slivers of wood and put them in your haversack ready for the brew-up. Another thing, with the rations, although the rations were very good indeed, there was never enough bread. So before going into the line, you'd scrounge round the local village baker and you'd go in with get a yard of French bread. Very nice it was too. Then you marched up to the line with a guide. And then before going into the line, you got the order load. You put 9 in your magazine and 1 up the spout, in other words, 1 up the breech. Put your safety catch on, and you always went into the line prepared to use your rifle immediately without going through, without the loading and so forth.
Presumably then, as you were going up to the front line, the unit you were going to replace would also be coming out.
No.
No?
No.
How was that organised?
They were there in the front line until they were actually relieved. For instance, as you passed through each bay, so you left off three men to replace the three men who were being relieved. And the first thing, you're simply carrying out a routine. The first thing, the first sentry would say to the sentry who was on duty, what is the range? Now, that question was, what is the range? How far are the German trenches away? Mm-hmm. And the reply would be 350 or 400, whatever the distance was. Mm. And that sentry would take over immediately.
Can we concentrate now on the routine of trench life by going through what an average day would be like? Starting at dawn, which is a fairly critical time.
Yes. Half an hour before dawn and the half an hour afterwards, that's 1 hour, everybody in the front line stood to. They were always... The sentries would be now, as soon as it became dawn, would be looking through periscopes, not with their head over the top. But everybody would stand to. That is, they were prepared in case there was an attack, because the favourite times for attack was dawn or dusk. Mm. And it's a very simple reason. Just before dawn, nobody can get a sight on you with a rifle. And the same words apply to dusk.
Why not?
You can't see them.
I see.
You can't see your sights. Mm. But so that was why it was always the favourite time for attack, either dawn or dusk.
Was all your observation done through
periscopes?
Through periscopes.
Through periscopes, yes.
What kind were they and how did you use them?
There was the box periscope, which was about 2 feet in height, with a mirror at the bottom set at an angle of 45, and the mirror at the top facing outwards so that one reflected on the other, and you simply hold that up so that your top mirror was looking over the top of the sandbags, looking towards the German line, and you're quite safe down below. The after stand to, nothing untoward had happened. Everybody, the order came, stand down, and then instead of a sentry to every bay, there would be perhaps two or three sentry groups in the whole company's front. And the rest of the men would see about having their breakfast.
Let's talk about breakfast. How was the food issued for breakfast?
Now, every night after stand down, the word would be passed along the trench, ration parties, and that would mean that the ration party for each company and the water party would then be conducted by generally a corporal to the battalion headquarters. There they would be met by the RSM, the Regimental Sergeant Major, and when the four companies' parties were all there, he would tell them to go to the out of the trenches and meet the transport who would be bringing the rations up. The rations used to come up on GS wagons, drawn by two horses. GS means General Service Wagons. They're four-horse open wagons. And in these wagons would be the various things, various cases of bully beef, cases of biscuits, tea, sugar, jam. And sometimes we had some very unusual things, such as dates, the sticky dates, the boxes of sticky dates, which were very welcome. Also butter. We always had plenty of tea, sugar, our milk, condensed milk. Always had plenty of butter. But we never had enough bread.
And this food would be issued to the ration parties.
They would be split up. The rations would be dumped by the quartermaster in four lots. That would be the four companies. And also a different, a small lot for battalion headquarters. Mm-hmm. They would be quite separate.
And how would the ration parties carry it from the track, from the issuing wagons up to the front line?
Well, now, the bread was put into sandbags. The cases, they were kept in their cases, we'll say, of biscuits, cases of bully beef. They would remain in their cases. And one man would take a case, another man would take two bags of bread, and so on, until all the rations were picked up.
And they just carry them on their shoulder?
Yes. Mm-hmm. They would come up the communication trenches. Now, in the summertime, it was quite an easy job. And it was a job that was looked forward to by the men, because it gave them a bit of exercise, took them away from the trenches, and they were glad of the exercise. But in the winter time, when it was wet and slippery, by the way, I haven't told you that by this time, in the spring of 1915, the trenches were now paved with duckboards, and they were a great blessing to us. It took us out of the mud. But coming back to the ration business, walking up the communication trenches on a wet night when it was pouring with rain and on slippery duckboards, the language was really edifying. You heard words that you never dreamed existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When the rations came up to the trench, they were taken to the company sergeant major's dugout. He always had a dugout. And they were dumped. And they weren't touched until next morning at stand down. At stand down.
Yes. Before we go on to the actual
issuing
for breakfast, what about the water? Was the water supplied in any different kind of way?
The water, we were not allowed to drink water other than from the water carts. Every battalion had a water cart with a corporal in charge. This was pulled by a pair of ponies. He used to get the water from places where the medical people had certified was drinkable, but he always added a handful of chloride of lime. And although this made your tea taste, and we hated the stuff, it was really necessary and we accepted them.
So in addition to ration parties, there would also be water parties.
The water party, each man carried two petrol tins, which he used to join together with a piece of rag or a handkerchief, one over the back and one on the front. And what the water was also left with the company sergeant major up in the front line. Mm-hmm. After stand down, each platoon sergeant would go along to the company sergeant major and would get rations for his platoon. All those rations would be laid out on a fire step. Now, each platoon was divided into four sections, each section in charge of a lance corporal or a corporal. The platoon sergeant would then divide those rations into four lots, and the corporals he would send along for, we'll say, corporal number one section, and the corporal would come along with two men and they would take his rations away. Then they would send along for number two, corporal of two section. And to save any disputes, that sergeant would let corporal number one section have the first choice on this day. The next day, the corporal of number two would have the first choice. Mm. And working in that rotation, he used to stop all grousing.
And once...